Tuesday, July 12th, I met the full impact of all the piled-up work of a 10 days absence. In the morning, signing and autographing, the final assault upon the wedding list with Margaret Deeb, and hopefully a last talk with Lucy on remembering and adding any more of her friends, with Bess about flowers, bills, clothes, the Israeli dinner list, and we had just finished work on a luncheon list for Mrs. Holt of Australia on the boat on Thursday, when we got word that she would not be accompanying her husband after all. Then the great luxury of 2 hours at Jean-Louis, nothing more taxing than the read and file envelope, and the psychological boost of walking out, looking much more attractive and on top of the world. At 2 o'clock was my main meeting of the day. Mary Lasca had come down from New York, and Nash, George Hartzog, Ralph Becker, Liz and I sat in the Queen's room and looked at plans for turning the west part of the Ellipse into a jewel of a garden centered with a fountain and glowing flower beds and walks, perhaps a little kiosk or tea room down close to Constitution Avenue. Mr. Becker has a possible patron, the great-granddaughter of the first park commissioner, who, in memory of our ancestors' love of Washington and his work here, might give enough money to make this possible. But nothing is ever simple. George Hartzog soon convinced us that any changes in the west side of the Ellipse must be an integral part of what is planned all along the mall, what is planned for the Ellipse, for underground parking, for the new depressed routing of East Street. It's like picking up a vast ball of knitting yarn and trying to find the piece where the thread begins. I asked George Hartzog the question that hangs over my head all the time. What about maintenance? Suppose we put in 24 more triangles and circles in the year 65 and 47 in the year 66. How much can we take care of well on our budget? That harassed man fixed me with a weary eye and said, Mrs. Johnson, hand labor is so high, it costs us about 1/3 of the cost of the park to maintain it annually. I can't believe that means the total cost. Brickwork, stonework, fountains, curbing, everything. But it is still a staggering figure and sobered us. How did we ever get as far as we have? In the midst of our talk, Bendon came in as though he were riding a whirlwind. He has a way, much of the time, of breathing excitement and life into any group that he walks into. We were in the midst of talking about training people for gardening, a national horticultural school, perhaps at Tregaron. He said we ought to start a pilot project in San Antonio with largely Mexican labor in some depressed area. Rewrite the job descriptions to say landscape engineers instead of litter gatherers. Of all that's happened to me in the White House, when I get beyond the basics of Lyndon, Linda Bird, and Lucy, nothing is more important than my involvement with beautification. But I want a new word for it. The final decision was to try to keep Ralph Becker's prospect interested while we waited for some overall plans, not too long, from Nat Owings. The more one deals with groups of peoples, the more one understands how it took a Caesar to build Rome and a Napoleon to build Paris. After more than 2 hours of talk, George and Liz and Ralph Becker left. Mary and Nash and I rode around to see the 2 miles of MacArthur Boulevard that we hoped to put azaleas in the median strip. Electric installations lie too close to the surface to make any tree planting feasible. Just shallow-rooted things can be used. And the lovely mile of Dale Carlia, where we hope to put a long line of pink and white and deep pink crepe myrtle for July and August splendor. It goes right behind my old house, the Elms. And we looked at Katie Lockheim's little triangle for which she had given $4,400. It looks quite shabby. I was disappointed. All the money went into basics, like retaining walls and sidewalks, just the remnant into plants. But Nash promises some specimen planting in the fall to replace it. Katie must be disenchanted, devoted though she is, and I want to correct that feeling. All of us purred whenever we drove past the demolition site of a temporary building. We talked about the prospects for a rose garden on the 27 acres of land down by the Potomac that had been set aside for the FDR Memorial. It could be the setting for a jewel of a monument, or maybe the monument itself. And then dropped off Mary for a 6 o'clock appointment, and I back to the White House, looked once more at the lovely paintings Mary had brought for Lucy to choose from for her wedding present. Raoul de Fee, gay and bubbly, blues and pinks and whites, and a charming Grandma Moses, a farmhouse with little figures and animals and fall foliage. What a dream of a present, either of them. I was saying goodbye to Mary until the falls, and she's leaving for Europe on Monday. I worked with Ashton for another hour and a half, and with Bess, who told me an hilarious story of how she and Simone had gathered 25 startled tourists from the sightseers' line this morning to see if they could stand in a little roped enclosure in the East Room where we proposed to put the press for the cake cutting. They were very obliging, though they had no notion of who they were stand-ins for. The funny things and the sad things that have happened in putting this wedding together would make a long story. And then the big event of the day, Lyndon was to deliver a speech to the American Alumni Council meeting. He'd expected to fly down to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia for it, and I would have gone along, but there was bad weather, so he did it by TV down in the theater at 8 o'clock. The whole substance was Asia, partner a problem, a reassertion of our determination to continue, our willingness to negotiate. Lyndon looked very bronze and hardy. He had come back bouncy and attacking problems, injecting adrenaline into all those around him, searching for answers. I love to see him like this. It's a reassurance to me as a wife and as a citizen. Jake and Bill went upstairs with us, but didn't stay for dinner. Lucy, who had sat beside me during her daddy's talk, and Pat came in. We discussed the possibility of Pat's registering for school in September, when we should give out the word that they had found their little apartment and would live in Austin and continue their schooling. And the unsolved problem of how to reach their honeymoon destination. If they go commercial, they'll be met at the other end by a reception committee of press and reporters. We were in bed and Lyndon attacking his night reading at the fairly reasonable hour of 11. I picked up the first three full-page stories from the Washington Post about former White House weddings. There will be a series of 12 such stories. Maria Monroe, the first, the two Wilson girls, today. And of course, on Sunday, the whole splash had begun with the most fabulous and glamorous of them all, the wedding of Alice Roosevelt to Nicholas Longworth. I finished feeling a little shaken at the 3 weeks that lie before us.